Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk some baseball with our man Mike McFarland. Mac, how you doing today?
Looking forward to watching some real baseball on real TV today.
You're damn right. And I'm looking forward to just saying Bobby Witt Jr. to you after he hit an inside-the-park home run. Okay, I'm not going to go crazy with this. I'm not going to get out of hand and do what I've done in the past and read his stats every day and everything else and be fixated on when he's going to come up. But, you know, we've seen this is a different minor league system. They're going to delay the start of AAA for a month. So how would you like to see the Royals handle Bobby Witt Jr.? Like, where would you like to see him start? And then, you know, as long as he's playing well, what type of path do you see for him at least this year?
Well, this year, they have to let him get a full season somewhere. I mean, look, you have no idea how grueling a 162-game schedule is, and that goes for a lot of these kids that are just coming up, including the young arms, of how long it really is and how demanding it is on the body. I think you got to see what they can do, how they handle the day-to-day playing, the ins and outs of the ups and downs, so to speak. But you got to let him go and find his feet, find his footing, let him go through some of those trials and tribulations, and then take a good hard look at him at the end of the season to see, all right, is it feasible? Do we have a need? Or you just want to let him get some more opportunities against some quality playing every single day in the minor leagues. And yes, you will continue to look at the stats every single day and wish and do
right.
An off.
I'm going to do a Bobby Witt Jr. segment every day on the show. How about that? Would you listen to that?
that's what we do, Mac. You know the drill. You know us well. What do you think about this delayed start to the AAA season when it comes? I don't know where Bobby Witt Jr. is going to start, but maybe when it comes to these young pitchers and all that. We talked to JJ Piccolo yesterday, and he sounded a little frustrated that there's just going to be this kind of dead period where they're going to be at an alternate site, not playing real games to try to keep the guys fresh before they start playing real games again. How much does or does that not set things back for these guys again?
Well, I'm with JJ on this. I think it's stupid. I would expand the AAA rosters, give them a couple extra arms and bodies to be able to start early on. I don't know if it's some, you know, protocol that they're trying to avoid, but that dead period, again, I just get back to sucking the life out of the kids that are just wanting to play. I 100% would say, let's go, let's start it, let's get after it, and maybe they're having some pushback from some cities. I wouldn't think they would, especially when all the talk of contraction and things like that. Well, you're not going to start, we'll go find another city that is willing to start on time. So I don't know how it's going to work, but it's really going to suck for those guys just having another 30 days of extended spring training when you can go out and start the season, expand the rosters a little bit, put more bodies on that thing just to get them going, so that kids can have a chance at a September call-up, whatever. But I'm with JJ on this. I think they need to rethink this and start the season on time.
We've got Mike McFarland on the line, and yesterday the Royals beat the Reds 5-3, and the first two pitchers the Royals used, a couple of veterans, Danny Duffy and Irvin Santana. Let's start with Duffy. Duffy went two innings, two hits, one run, two walks, and a couple of strikeouts, but after the game, he said that just about his slider, he said, I don't think it's ever been this good this early. I didn't stop throwing, so I think that plays into what I'm doing right now. And so he's very happy with where he is. for this season, I know he's in the rotation right now, but how do you think this season, which could be the last season for Duffy in a Royals uniform, how do you think this plays out for him?
Well, I think you just said it right there. He has something to prove in order to be one of those veterans on this staff. Definitely has something to go with it. And I like the fact he didn't stop throwing. We're not talking throwing 100 pitches, bullpens or things like that. But you're also talking with him and Santana about two veterans that are working on stuff. And if his slider is this good this early, keep doing it. They're out there working on stuff. They know where their spot is on the team. And especially in Danny's case, yeah, I think he has something to prove because you have a tremendous amount of talented young arms coming up, which, again, you know, he's safe right now, but because these kids haven't thrown a lot of pitches in professional ball, and especially with last year's situation, so they're going to let those arms toughen up a little bit in certain locations. But, yeah, moving forward after this year for Danny Duffy, absolutely. And if not, you know, irregardless of wanting to stay a Royal, I think your preference is to stay in the major leagues and pitch for a lot more years ahead. So work on the slider, continue to be that veteran presence with some of those young pitchers. Go out, work on your stuff this spring training, get off to a good start, and pitch like the Danny Duffy of old.
Okay, so then Stephen also referenced Irvin Santana. Not a great game for him yesterday. Two innings and two runs allowed, three hits. He's trying to, you know, hold on to the last stages of his career, kind of bring it back a little bit. What are your thoughts on where he factors in this spring for the Royals?
Well, I think he has to be a little bit better than most. Like you said, trying to hold on, trying to show that he still has one more good year in him. We all remember the devastating slider that he used to have, injuries and age catching up to him. He has to be better than average, in my opinion, in order to make the opening day roster.
Mike McFarland is our guest. Mac, what was your reaction to the Royals bringing Jerrod Dyson back on a one-year, $1.5 million deal?
Speed in the outfield, speed on the bench, above-average defender, getting up there a little bit in age, hasn't had a history of injuries. I think it's a cheap deal to add some of that. You know, we've talked about the need of having a veteran on the bench that could go in and do something for you. And the thing that Dayton identifies is weapons, whether it's an arm, whether it's the integrity of the player, the speed, the ability to come off the bench and swing the bat as a professional hitter. Those are all weapons, and I think Dayton does a good job of identifying that and bringing Jerrod Dyson back. You know what? He'll understand his role. He'll be appreciative of his role, and he'll go out and give you everything, every chance he has when he's called upon to do so. But in this lineup, you have the chance to put him in a late-inning situation and grab a bag and score on a base hit to win a ball game. That's a nice little valued asset that you have in your back pocket that you can use on a nightly basis.
We're chatting with Mike McFarland, and Max, something that happened earlier this week I've been really interested in was the performance of Jacob Junis. He pitched really well, but it was what he said after the game about his cutter that he has added this offseason, and he feels like he commands it really well. It's turned into a really good pitch for him, and he wishes he would have added it sooner. I'm curious, and we're wondering if he is locked into being a bullpen guy this year, or if he has a chance that he's going to try to earn himself a spot in the starting rotation. If you take the same Jacob Junis that you've had in the past and you add a decent cutter or maybe an above-average cutter to his arsenal, what does that tell you about him as a pitcher? Does that change the way you look at him and where you see him fitting in this year?
Oh, absolutely. Look, the cutter is a tweener between the slider and the fastball. So you give the hitter a different look. It has the every bit the look of a fastball that just tends to, well, as the word says, cut away from a right-handed batter and miss the barrel at the last moment. He's always had pretty good spin and torque on his off-speed pitch, so, you know, the inclination to just, you know, grip it a little bit differently, get on the side of it and let it cut away from a bat or cut onto the hands of a left-handed batter, hitters don't really like that, where you can read the rotation of a breaking ball. You can be on time with the fastball, but then you get something that is jumping one side, jumping away from you, or jumping in to a lefty. It makes things a little bit more difficult. You get caught in between. The danger of a cutter is when it doesn't cut, it pretty much speeds up every single hitter's bat in the game. So the fact that he's been working on it and it does have good action, and he has the confidence to throw it, I think it's outstanding for him. You know, he's got a little bit bulldog mentality on there on the mound when he's out there, but the fact that he can throw that and have a pretty decent slider breaking ball is going to be a big hit for him.
So you mentioned weapon. What kind of weapon could Junis be out of the bullpen?
A guy that could come in to pitch both to righties and lefties. That helps. You don't have to go with a matchup, especially if he's adding a ball that he can get on the knuckles of a left-handed batter with his little two-seam fastball going away from them, and you got the breaking ball and an above-average fastball. So it's one of those guys that you don't have to worry necessarily about matchups with him, especially if his cutter's working really well. Now, instead of just the hard and soft pitch, now you got a middle pitch for the hitter to worry about when he's in the batter's box. And all it'll take is one hitter to come back to the bench and say how much that ball moved or cut on him to put a little seed of doubt in the minds of hitters on the other side. So I'm sure, you know, it's good that he's preaching it to the world. I might have kept it a little bit quieter and left it just, hey, Opie, I don't know what the hell that pitch was, but God dang, it jumped. Let them try and figure it out rather than telling everybody that you got this new pitch that's working real well for you.
The cutter is such an interesting pitch, though, Mac, because there at least have been a few pitchers in history that you knew the cutter was coming and you still couldn't hit it. Obviously, Mariano Rivera is the most famous for that, and I'm not suggesting that Jacob Junis is going to be at that level with his cutter, but and when you described what it does when a right-hander throws a cutter to a left-handed batter versus a slider, it made me think of a question I've never really asked a big leaguer before. You hear a lot about, like, when a righty throws that slider to a left-handed batter, that they call it a back foot slider, where you're trying to kind of drop it in across the back of the plate. You're kind of hoping for no contact on that pitch. But you know, if you make a mistake with a slider, I've always heard that that's the pitch that maybe gets hit the farthest in baseball. Is a cutter a better pitch for a righty to throw to a lefty? Or, I don't know, like, how would you describe what it does for a right-handed pitcher if he has that in his bag versus just relying on the slider against the lefty?
Well, the pitch stays on the same plane, I guess, is the best way to put it. It doesn't have the depth or the curveball aspect to it on that back foot slider that you were talking about. So what happens is you read it out of the hand, you're expecting it to drop down and in, and instead it stays, you know, thigh high, waist high, and next thing you know, you're picking up your knuckles off the ground because the ball explodes inside. Now, it'll be interesting to see once we can see him on television to take a look at it, but I don't know how much it jumps, but just coming from a righty hitter against that cutter, it tends to find the tip of the bat a lot more often than it finds the barrel when it throws good. And that's what, you know, Mariano Rivera threw nothing but cutters his entire career, and it was just, you had no idea that it was going to move until it was about a foot in front of the plate, and then the ball just exploded to the side. So, you know, not putting him in that regards, but it's still a difficult pitch to hit, especially when it's thrown well.
Can you believe that Nate compared Junis to Mariano Rivera?
That's stunning. You know, I was going to say more along the lines of Tim Belcher. He used to throw a cutter a lot, and then he would four-seam one up in the zone. He pitched very well up in the zone, and, you know, he had a changeup to go with it. But his cutter, when it was on, it was, you know, you threw it a lot. So you're reading fastball speed at 90-plus miles an hour, with a little bit of movement. So that's what makes it so hard. You have to gear for the fastball, gear for the velocity, and then the next thing you know, it's moving away from the barrel, either to the tip of the bat or on your hands.
Okay, Tim Belcher's name coming up just reminds me of my job when I was an intern at KMBZ Radio and doing pre and post.
Oh God, did he wear you out?
He was, oh, you talk about a red A after games. I was in charge of logging all the sound. I didn't get to interview anybody, but I would log the sound. And just for some reason, I remember my first day on the job, he had had a rough game. And Greg Eklund asked him after the game, were you struggling with a certain pitch? Is that why the game didn't go well tonight? And he just looked at him and said, no, I struggled today because I was horse blank.
That was Tim. You're talking about a country boy that did not mince words, and Eck is about the nicest guy ever to do an interview with. And you know, he would generally go off on a reporter, and then the next day, oh man, I'm sorry, I got to be more professional. It was just after the game. He'd come with the mea culpa real quick. But yeah, Belch was definitely one of the fiercest competitors out there on the mound. When it was his day to pitch, you definitely stayed away from him.
Hey, Mac, let's close with some good news. As the Royals announced yesterday, they will open the season with approximately 30% capacity. That's around 10,000 fans per game. And according to the release, the initial plan calls for pod-style seating to accommodate 10,000 fans per game, with goals to expand the capacity monthly as the season progresses, and it is safe to do so. They've been working with Kansas City health officials and the Jackson County Sports Authority to ensure fan safety. That's good news for fans, and also, Mac, that's got to be good news for players as well, because they want to play in front of fans. It's a different experience, and after going through that last year, I'm sure that a lot of the players are excited that they'll be able to play in front of fans now at Kauffman Stadium.
Oh God, yes. I mean, just talking to some of the players this off season that we're working out, and just hearing, you know, I think it had a huge effect on some of the seasons that some of these players had last year that feed off the crowd and the emotions. 10,000, while Kauffman Stadium holds obviously a hell of a lot more than that, just the fact of having them there, and you get to see bodies moving around instead of, you know, the Gumby poster sitting there, you know, blowing in the wind and the piped in music, you don't understand the feel, and you know, sentimentally speaking, when you're standing out on second base and you're in front of a full house and stuff like that. It's just the aura and the feel of the game. It's just Major League Baseball, and I think that was missed. I think it was missed with the crowd noise, the real true reactions instead of the piped in stuff from last year. We were all pleased just to see the game again last year, but having bodies moving around and fans chasing after foul balls and home runs and interaction with the players, you know, throwing balls to little kids in the stands, and everything about it, having live bodies in there, is going to be just a huge improvement over last year. And just please let us have at least full capacity by the end of the season and go from there.
Mac, I agree with you, man. Couldn't have said it better myself. Mike McFarland has been our guest. Mac, we'll talk to you more about baseball as we get closer and closer to the regular season. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you for the time. Have a great weekend.
You got it, boys. You too.